And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
My next guest makes it her goal in life to keep us busy before we die. She's the creator of the 1,000 Places to See Before You Die series of books. It's a big world out there, and she's determined that we don't miss any single part of it. We'll discuss her revised edition of the 1,000 Places to See in the United States and Canada Before You Die. As always, if you want to join in the conversation or if you want to talk to Patricia Schultz, you can call us at 639-0008. If you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Patricia Schultz is the editor of the international bestsellers, 1,000 Places to See Before You Die. She's also written for Forders, Access, and Berlitz Travel Guides, and magazines Condé Nast Traveler, Islands Magazines, Departures, and Harper's Bazaar. Her home base is New York City. Welcome to the show, Patricia. How are you today?
Very well, thank you.
Well, thank you.
It's snowing here in Manhattan.
And it's not out here in California, I will tell you that. We have a beautiful, crisp, but sunny day here in Southern California, just to make you envious, because 1,000 Places to See Before You Die in your book really does cover a lot of different climates, a lot of different places for people who like the variety that you have in the United States and Canada. My first question, Patricia, is this. You know, you write these books, 1,000 Places to See Before You Die. Did you visit all 1,000 places that you write about in the book?
Well, in full disclosure, no, I haven't. A lot of the places I actually pulled from having visited earlier before I started to put this book together. And a lot of places, such as, you know, the Grand Canyon, although I have been there, you just know belong in a book of this kind, of this nature,
sure.
Even though I may not have visited. But I have to say that for the 4 years it took me to put this book together, it was incessant, you know, zigzagging back and forth across the U.S. and brainstorming with travel guide colleagues of mine who live in various areas of the country and researching. So, no, because I still am ticking off. I still have my own bucket list. I'm still trying to, you know, make my way through the 1,000. But I have visited the majority of them, yeah.
Oh, that's good. So have your travels brought you out here to Southern California, specifically to the Santa Barbara Ventura area?
Yeah, I have. You know, California was one of my challenges because there's so much. Every state in the union offers its own specialness, its own, you know, roster of unmissable highlights and, you know, must-sees and all of that. But California, really, I could have done 1,000 places in California alone, and it was quite daunting to, you know, narrow it down to make it not top-heavy so that, you know, half the book took place on the West Coast. Because really between California and New York, I think I could have sewn up the 1,000 places. So it was a challenge. But you live, I think, in one of the most gifted, beautifully endowed states in the union. And you have everything, you know, I don't have to tell you, from Death Valley to the Redwoods, you know, from the coastline to the whole wine country, which is one of the premier wine regions in North America, and now on the world scene. So it's pretty sweet. I can understand why Californians may want to never venture very far from home, although this was not the goal of the book.
No, we're talking to Patricia Schultz, author of the book, 1,000 Places to See in the United States and Canada Before You Die. And I would argue a little bit with you, Patricia, about every state having its own beauty spots. I defy you to tell me what's beautiful about North Dakota. But back to your book. Looking at the book, in your book, there are only three areas mentioned in Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. There's the city of Ojai, which is here in Ventura County, the city of Santa Barbara, and the Santa Ynez Valley. Some of the other places that you might have missed, Gardens of the World and everything else. How do you go through that editing process? I mean, you alluded to it in your answer before, but really, you got to be a real strict editor, and only three areas from our two counties made it in. Could have been a lot more. How did you go about choosing the three that you chose?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, you look at the big picture and you understand that California, being one of the largest states from north to south, is going to give you quite a plethora of contenders. And then I tried to create a balance so that there was room for all of the different states. You can't, I think... you know, it's hard to balance apples and oranges and all of the Grand Canyons with all of the, you know, Sonoma farmers markets. So my bottom line, my ultimate goal was to really be very mindful of coming forth with a mix. And it would be a mix within each state as well as a mix throughout the U.S. because I didn't want it to be, you know, exclusively places of natural beauty, nor did I want it to be only man-made creations such as museums, world-class restaurants, or only the arts, you know, just festivals, just theaters, opera houses, Shakespearean festivals, etc. So that really was what I was aiming at, and I think it's what I managed, at least to some degree, to arrive at. And that is how I travel, because while I like to eat and I like music and, you know, a national park of great beauty will knock my socks off, I also like to walk away from a vacation having felt like I've experienced a little bit of everything and mixing it up and seeing seeing it all. And coming at you know, a destination like the U.S., you can be that fussy and you can be that particular because we do have it all. And that's why it was a charm to do this book. It wasn't trying to ferret out 1,000 places and fill the pages. Rather, it was trying to keep it down to just 1,000, and that was the real challenge.
And I imagine it was. 1,000 Places to See in the United States and Canada Before You Die is the title of the book. And one of the things that you mentioned in the book for California is the Mission Trail that goes from San Diego all the way up to San Francisco. Did you travel the entire Mission Trail, Patricia?
No, but, you know, I kind of pieced it. I connected all the dots only at an embarrassingly late point in my life when it came to me as if a light bulb that there was a trail here to be had. Certainly not last weekend, but I was, you know, into my 20s or 30s and already had visited Santa Barbara and already had visited the Mission and Carmel and here and there, and then realized that that historical chapter in our in a young America had totally bypassed me and my East Coast education. I don't believe either I slept through that class or we just never learned about it. And I think that's what's so precious about travel, that you go to these places, you have a good time, it's a change of air, a change of scenery, you learn, you see, you have a you know, a nice lunch, you meet people, it becomes a wonderful vacation, and what you take away from it and carry with you is really priceless when you think about it. So it's a win-win situation. You've had a great time and you've learned so much. And it's like a year back at school. And if you travel with your kids, how precious it is to instill that in them as well.
And to see the world through their eyes. We're talking to Patricia Schultz, everybody. And Patricia, one of the things that I've always noted about your books is the title. Right away, the title, 1,000 Places to See Before You Die. It intrigues readers. It gives you a sense of urgency. What's the story behind the title of the books? Did you come up with that yourself?
That's a great question, because the book came out after September 11th, but by then it was 2 or 3 years. It came out in 2003, the first world book. And whereas had it come out a year or two earlier, I think it would have been too alarming. But by now it's, you know, kind of tongue-in-cheek, and it's very irreverent, and it's no dress rehearsal. We all know that there are two things you have to do in life, and one of them is to die. So carpe diem, do it now, get off the couch already. You've been talking about this for life. You've been wanting to go to a certain place since forever. So make it happen already, you know. It's a priority. Nobody's going to put a check for your airfare on your desk and say, here, it's on me. And so, you know, you stay for 4 nights instead of 10. You stay in a 2-3 star instead of a 10 star. You know, you rent a car that's a category a little less luxurious than you would. You know, but make it happen, and it can happen. And I think the title is great because it grabs you, and nobody has ever asked me, oh, really, what's the book about? It kind of explains itself, doesn't it?
Very self-explanatory. And carpe diem, that is a great theme. We're going to carry that theme through into the second hour when we talk to Seth Godin, because his latest book talks all about carpe diem. Patricia, in the recent downturn in the economy, has that had any impact at all on travel and on the demand for travel books like yours in general?
You know, it'll be a kind of wait and see. It's an interesting question because it's on everybody's mind, especially in the travel world. And it's so early in the spring, which is the big travel season for planning and for actual booking and all of that. So it remains to be seen. But I think, as far as I'm concerned, it's you know, a blessing in disguise, because if you're not doing the whole, you know, 10 days in Bora Bora, or if you, you know, are thinking twice about the elaborate trip with the whole family, certainly within 2 or 3 hours car ride, you know, do your great iconic road trip with the family or the dog in the back seat. You know, this is maybe the year to do, you know, to see those national parks that are minutes from your backyard. I mean, it's almost embarrassing what we have and we keep putting off. And the Four Corners area, which is relatively close to you, to me, it's one of the most remarkable corners of the world, and not just North America. So we needn't go very far, and gas is expensive, but, you know, so is life. And this is a precious experience, and we're very lucky to be able to travel and to travel so freely. So I just say, you know, make it happen, and that carpe diem thing, I don't say lightly, because you really never know, do you?
No, you don't. We're talking to Patricia Schultz, and Patricia, your book doesn't focus just on California, although naturally I have, because we live here in California. There are many other interesting places to see in the United States and Canada. So talk to me a little bit about some of the other exciting places. For example, collecting exotic shells on the beaches of Captiva Island. Tell me about that.
Well, Florida, you know, I was in London about a year ago promoting the book there, and some very seemingly traveled, well-traveled British woman said to me, you know, we Brits think America is all about New York, San Francisco, and Orlando. And I thought, well, that's very sad. There are 997 other places I can tell you about. But she did isolate Florida as being one of the must-visit places, which is odd, because really if there wasn't Disney World, most Europeans wouldn't think of Florida. But on the west coast, the northwest coast, north above Tampa, there's a long stretch of beautiful coastline in Florida, which unfortunately is more and more developed, but what's not when you have a little sliver of paradise like that? But areas of it are still very reminiscent of the old Florida, you know, the kind of Hemingway, big game fishing, you know, decades ago, that is still palpable and still very enjoyable to me. And there's a town which, in the world of shell collectors, is said to be one of the top three places to collect shells because of the currents, and after a storm it leaves these very precious, almost works of art. The variety and the different sizes and colors of the shells apparently is unmatched, and that's what Captiva and Sanibel is all about. Who knew, right?
Oh, well, you're making me anxious to go. I tell you, I'm looking forward to vacation already. Now, what about playing tennis on grass in a Newport casino in Newport, Rhode Island? Now, that sounds old world, Gilded Age sort of living.
Well, it is. And if you've ever, have you ever been to Newport, Rhode Island?
Only once for a business convention, never got outside of the hotel.
Oh, no. Oh, well, need to go back. Newport is such a beautiful city. All of, really, New England, you know, it's kind of far for you because it's the other side of the country, but coming from New York City, it's quite accessible for us to head north to that beautiful area of the U.S. And I was researching all the various halls of fame when doing the book, because I'd heard about the pro football one in Canton, Ohio. Lots of football players in my family. I had been to Cooperstown and upstate New York baseball, and I heard about this kind of sacred ground mecca for tennis buffs in Newport. Newport also is so beautiful because it's where all of the big moneyed families built these quote-unquote cottages, which is a kind of false modesty for, you know, 300-bedroom homes that the Vanderbilts, the Astors, the Rockefellers, and they built them on the waterfront. There's a beautiful pathway called the Ocean Path or the Ocean Trail or something, where you can walk and gaze up at these mansions that are a throwback to another time. And Newport in general is still very tony and very well-heeled, and there's a lot of money there. It's a big yachting focal point on the East Coast. There are a lot of regattas that go in and out. There's a great island off the coast of Rhode Island called Block Island.
Yes.
Most of it's protected, so it's very undeveloped and very pristine, and with great biking and great birding and great just, you know, flip-flop kind of laid-back island vacation that is even more authentically New England than, let's say, Martha's Vineyard or Nantucket, which gets a lot more people. So, yeah, the list is long.
Oh, no doubt about it. And the list doesn't include just United States. You also go into Canada. Tell me about the Ice Hotel in Quebec. Why would I want to go there? It sounds cold.
Oh, brr, I know. Well, wait till it's 95 degrees next month, and you'll be giving the Ice Hotel a second thought. Although it's very seasonal. As soon as it turns warm, it melts back into the river.
Right.
It's on the shore of the St. Lawrence River outside of Quebec, and it's a kind of copycat of the original one in Sweden, which was built for the first time out of hundreds of tons of ice and packed snow. And what they do with these structures, I don't know what else to call them, they create a very elaborate hotel with separate rooms, and everything is kind of carved out of this large piece of ice. There's an ice bar, and there are ice stools to sit on while you're drinking your Stolichnaya. And it's in operation for 4 or 5 months of the year. Really, you sleep there for one night if you dare, and then they have conventional bungalows if you want to stay a second or a third night. And it becomes a kind of Arctic safari getaway. There are dog sled rides. You can hope to see the Aurora Borealis because it's the northern lights are typical at that time of the year in the winter months. You can go cross-country skiing. You can do all of those wonderful winter things and spend the night. It's not inexpensive, but it's a kind of before-you-die type of thing for some people.
Sure, and it sounds great. However, I don't think I'd ever get my wife to go there. We're talking to Patricia Schultz, author of the book, 1,000 Places to See in the United States and Canada Before You Die. And Patricia, I have to ask you, with all of this travel and obvious your clear enthusiasm for travel, what did you get out of writing 1,000 Places to See Before You Die?
You know, that's a great question, and there are two things, and one, well, it's kind of a two-part answer to the same, part of the same answer. One is that until you get out there and on the road and you're off and in the middle of your trip rather than at your computer planning it or watching it all on a flat-screen television, you just never really know what awaits and how wonderful it is. You know, you've seen it on television, you've read about it in the magazines, you've seen the postcards, but it's always so much more wonderful. And a big part of that is, and this is the second part of my answer, the people. I think that whether you're traveling in Idaho or Botswana, or if you're in an English-speaking country or you have no idea what they're talking about, I think that the interaction element of any trip is what makes or breaks it. And I can only say that in my world, it always makes a good trip better because there are wonderful people all over the world, and it just makes something that's kind of monodimensional suddenly very, it kicks it up to a different level. And the people across America, I've met a lot of characters.
Yeah, I can imagine. We're going to have to leave it there. We've been talking to Patricia Schultz, author of the book, 1,000 Places to See in the United States and Canada Before You Die. Patricia, absolutely loved having you on the show. Thank you for writing this book and, of course, your other book as well.
Thank you.
Been great talking to you. Thanks for being a guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Great. Thanks so much. Have a great week.
And you do the same, too. Thanks.